Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
fighting.
Right
now, right now.
Now's the time to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
That's right. That's right. We are going to do it right. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we are live at Black Radio Hall of Fame. I just want you to know that the opinions expressed on Black Radio Hall of Fame are those of the program host and not necessarily those of Ferristo State University or BRHF. So we are going to move forward, but I do want to say that when we think about what's going on in the world today, even if we think about what's going on in St. Louis and Missouri, it is a lot to absorb. And so I'm just going to ask people to take care of themselves and each other, take care of your mental health, and find ways of getting some outlets for your anger, your pain, because I know some days, y'all, if it wasn't for y'all, I would be like, somebody's going to experience some hurt today, but we are going to be sane and civil and organized so that we can have some true victories here. I want to introduce my guest today. It is Bakarai Olatunji, and he is a member of Uhuru Movement, and he has relocated here from Oakland, California to help the Uhuru Movement with some of their economic enterprises, and he'll talk about that later. But the important stuff, y'all, is y'all know the Uhuru Movement has been under attack. The Uhuru 3 is facing trial in shortly, in actually a week now. So we really want to raise the level of awareness and understanding of the why. Why is this happening now? So welcome, Bakarai, to kind of help us walk through that. Welcome to, first of all, to St. Louis, and then welcome to Voices from the Battlefield.
Thank you, Jamala. I really appreciate being here. And it's always a pleasure to be able to address the people to the information as it's helpful to move this project forward.
Okay. So I know that Chairman O'Malley Yeshitali was on last year, and so I need you just to give an update, a little bit of the history of Uhuru Movement and the history of this particular charge and the indictments and the you know, governmental, like, repression of the organization. So let's start with, who is Uhuru Movement?
Well, Uhuru is Swahili for freedom. And it is something that came out of the 1950s, the struggle with the British against, the struggle of the Kenyan Land Freedom Army against the British colonialism. And so we raised up Uhuru, which means freedom. And we've taken that slogan and the Uhuru Movement. If you call any of our offices or any of our members, you will hear us say Uhuru. We say it in greeting and we say it in passing. Freedom has to be on the mind of our people 24/7 and not just as an empty slogan. But Chairman O'Malley Yeshitali, formerly known as Joseph Waller, was a person who cut his political teeth during the SNCC years. He was a SNCC organizer in the late 50s, early 60s. And you, of course, know a lot about SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and the work that they did. And the 1964 summer project that they built then was something that grew, got national attention, where you had people coming from all over the country and all over the world coming in to help with the voter registration of African people during the time when African people were being murdered just for coming out to vote. And even on that first day of the Mississippi summer Freedom Project. You had three of their workers that were murdered. I think, you know, we talked about that before in this program, Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney, and one of them being an African who was murdered. And that's even parallels to today, where you have the chairman being put on trial, and he has two white people with him going before the federal government. So we can see the parallels from the 1964 Summer Project, which was massive and got a lot of resistance from the U.S. government. And today we have what we call Freedom Summer, or the 2024 Summer Project, happening in St. Petersburg, Florida right now. And this Mississippi, Summer Project was something that is occurring now during cyberspace, whereas the one that occurred in 1964 was pre-cyberspace. It was a period when real organizers worked among real people, providing organization and political education, which we're going to be providing as well in Florida in the next few weeks. And Freedom Summer 1964 challenged the vicious anti-black oppression that was carried out by this U.S. government. And it was a period when African people, black people, it was known throughout the world that this government put dogs on people trying to register to vote, put water hoses on people just standing up for their rights. And then you see today they flip that to where you find general white people in the United States government is fearing black people, as if something has changed, as if the power paradigm has changed, and we are still colonized today. We were colonized 60 years ago. So this particular attack that you're talking about against the Hoover movement, the most recent attack was on July 29, 2022, when the U.S. government initiated a violent military-style assault on seven offices and homes of the Hoover movement, both in two cities, in St. Petersburg, Florida, and here in St. Louis, Missouri. And it was 9 months later that the chairman of Malia Shatella, Penny Hess, and Jesse Nevels, two white leaders of the party's Solidarity Front, were indicted on charges of being Russian agents. And, you know, Russia is always pandered as this boogeyman for the United States government. It's something they've been doing from the Marcus Garvey era to W.E.B. Du Bois,
Dr. Martin Luther King,
name it. So, you know, the thing is, we stated, and this is something I did listen to the tape from your previous show with the chairman, where we talked about we're not going back. And it's so interesting that this seems to be the new mantra that this new person who's running for president on the donkey side of the ticket is talking about, we ain't going back, how they taken our slogan of not going back. Mm-hmm. And we're not going back, and we're moving forward. So, you know, this Freedom Summer in St. Petersburg is going to be massive. Coming on August 31st, which is next week, we're going to have hundreds and hopefully thousands of people coming to a rally that's going to be at the Uhuru House there in St. Petersburg, Florida. We want to really build and encourage people to come and participate in Freedom Summer. We have right now over 150 organizations that have endorsed Freedom Summer. And we have a lot of organizations who are actually coming to be on the program, to speak, to be a part of the outreach, to build this really anti-colonial mass movement in this country. It's a new day in time. Mm-hmm. It's similar to what we saw in the 1960s when we saw African people out marching to push back the state, to get out people so that it can have the right to vote during those days. And you know, the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1965, the Voters' Rights Act in 1964, and all of this happened because of the motion of the people.
Exactly.
You know.
And Bakari, one of the things I'm thinking about is, you know, we still are uplifting Mike Brown Jr.'s murder by a Ferguson police officer, and then the Ferguson uprising. And one of the things that you just said really resonated me, because it seems like coming out of that was a spirit of we're not going back, we're not doing anymore, and just a resolve by people like, we're moving forward. All this stuff that you all are trying to put in the way, we know what you're doing, we're clear on it now, and we're moving forward. And you know, this is Black August, where a lot of struggle historically has taken place. So it just seems so apropos that this is centered now, right now, in this particular moment of history, and how do we move forward? You know, I think one of the things I do really want my listening audience to think about is, what if, and just think about this for who you are, what your profession is, what your role is in your particular family, what if all of a sudden you got a knock on the door, or you were driving and were pulled over, and now you have a charge. You have a bogus charge that you now are compelled to defend yourself. Now, think about what your financial means are right now and whether or not you will be able to build a sufficient enough defense to clear your name. I want you to think about that, because we are slowly but surely and methodically moving towards a police state where people are going to get these kinds of charges, and they will be looking around to see who's going to help me. So, Baccarat, if ever there was a time when that saying about when they come for me in the morning, they're going to come for you at night, we really need to be thinking about that and how it's going to play out in our particular communities. And I'm saying that because sometimes we react at the last minute as opposed to putting things in place that's going to help us resist and resolve some of these issues. But I think what's happening to the Uhuru 3, we're going to start to see that again and again and again. I mean, you know, they already got the laws in place. They got the courts in place to their favor. You got Project 2025 that's, you know, targeting some of our leaders, our organizers, our esteemed elders. And here we are with somebody like the chairman. And you think, okay, haven't y'all really done enough? I mean, really, you know, you're still on that generation of folks trying to bring them down. So I know that there has been lots of activities here in St. Louis, but there has to be going on all over the country. What is it looking like when you all have these discussions with people about the nature of the case? And then talk some about what the actual charges are. I mean, I know you said collusion with Russia, but what does that really mean? And what did they find in all of the boxes of stuff that they took and the computers they took that would lead them that they could even, you know, justify that bogus charge?
Well, I do agree with you. It is bogus charges. And I don't have before me the specific charges, the federal codes and things of the sort like that. But in essence, they're saying that they're agents of Russia, and that they failed to register as agents mm-hmm. of Russia. Mm-hmm. And they both carry sentences of 10 and 5 years. So Chairman Amalia Shetella, Penny Hess, and Jesse Neville can get 15 years off of this. And it is bogus, as you said. And, you know, this type of attack against the Uhuru movement is not anything new, but it comes at a time when we see the fragility of this system that we live in. We see the uneasiness in the whole terrain of the United States political arena. It was just a few years ago when you saw people on January 6th climbing the halls of the White House, going and taking over offices. And this was not the Uhuru movement.
Right,
this was
right,
not
right.
Penny Hess. This was not Jesse Neville. These were people who went and defecated on the offices there in the White House.
Ran through the halls with nooses, yeah, looking for people to lynch.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the reality is that in this case, they charged us with where Russia had to come in and tell us about how to have an election and raise the question of reparations. And the Uhuru movement dealt with one of the first reparations conventions here in the U.S., where in 1982 in New York, we had the first tribunal of reparations for African people. Well, we had quantified $4.1 trillion is what the United States government had owed us. So the thing is, this attack on us is nothing new. Of course, they can only come with bogus charges. We have not violated any laws of what they say. And what we have at the center of this is free speech. It is about free speech. They locked Marcus Garvey up for free speech. They censored Paul Robeson for free speech. And like I said, the list goes on and on and on. So what we really have to do is, like, even free speech for African people is something that we've never had.
I was just getting ready to say, if they can get us on that, it's almost as if we are in violation of the law based on being non-citizens. Like, how would it not apply to us if we're citizens of this United States?
Exactly. And we have to hold them to the letter of their law. It's always applied to them. And the reality is, as African people in 1791, when they ratified the First Amendment, when they talked about that whole question of free speech and protection from political persecution, they were solving their problems, who were running from Europe, running from the kings and the queens, where they were running from tyranny. And what it gave them the right at that time in 1791, they began to have tyranny over the Africans that they brought over here that they didn't look at as equal citizens. Right. So we did not have citizenship. We were not equal during that time. So their rights that they won for free speech were not for us. They never applied to us. But in this case, they have to say that because they can't come out and say, we're going to attack y'all because y'all represent a resistance that is going to expose us as the kind of government that we are. So the thing is, the way they're coming at us is a way that we have to bring to the people to say, this is the same system that brought us over here in these ships. It is the same system that has oppressed us the last 400 years. And it is the same system that is coming and attacking the Uhuru movement right now. And the way we saw that, as you talked about earlier, about how they can tie us up in the courts and drain our resources. I think you mentioned something about Mike Brown and his murder. And that, by the way, that's what brought the Uhuru movement here to St. Louis. As a resistance of the young people here, the resistance of the community here is what brought Uhuru to St. Louis. And we're here to stay, by the way. But I think that when we look at that murder of Mike Brown, you remember the cop that did it? What was his name?
His name was Darren Seals.
Okay. You remember how he got over $1 million in donations where
exactly.
People was supporting him.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is, that they were supporting the wrong person. That money should have been going to the African community. You know, in terms of overturning a lot of the conditions here, but that's our job and that's what we're going to have to do. But to solve that collectively, we have to get the information out to the people. The people will rub two nickels and pennies and dimes, whatever together, and they will send that money to where it would make the difference in us winning. And that's what we've been doing. They attacked us and they tied us up in this whole legal system, but we're winning and we're defeating that because we're raising money. We're going to the people. We're raising this issue. We're going door to door through the summer project. We're letting people know what is going on with this trial that is really about free speech. And it's not just for the African community. It's for everybody. You know, we have coalition work right now. We have Mexicans coming into St. Petersburg, Florida. We have white leftists coming there to St. Petersburg, Florida. We have Palestinians coming there. We have people from every walk who support the right of self-determination of African people. And that is the thing that collectively we will win, and collectively we're going to beat back this really fragile state right now. So I think it's really important that people understand that they have to come to St. Pete. They have to come to the trial of the Uhuru 3 in Tampa, Florida, September 3rd, August 31st in St. Petersburg, Florida. And, you know, if you can't get there, go to handsoffuhuru.org to see how you can support it one way, shape, form, or another.
Wow. So, you know, one of the things that I'm thinking about is this whole concept of a foreign agent and how it could be stretched and manipulated. I mean, we saw this during the House of Un-American Activities, how it stretched. And as you said, looking at Russia at the time, Soviet Union, as the boogeyman. And so any reference, any relationship, any mention of a theme related to that could put you in the spotlight of being a foreign agent. But this is the first time it's actually been used to prosecute folks. So this is something we got to keep our eye on, Bakari, because now if they are successful, they're going to use it again and again. And so one of the things I thought about when I first heard them use it against the Uhuru 3 is as somebody like myself, who's not just an organizer, but also interested in world affairs. And so I'm, you know, looking on the, you know, surfing the internet for information. Sometimes I'm doing that in reference to, not only do I have this podcast, but I'm also a writer. So I have several columns. So I'm constantly looking at, you know, things that are going on in the world, what's going on in Russia. And so I'm like, okay, what ties could they say for me that, after looking at my, browser, like, oh, she keeps going back to this. I mean, so we can see that something that could be totally harmless in your own eyes now could be used against you. So the four agent thing, I just want you all to remember that term, because I think we're going to hear it again. And definitely during the trial of the Uhuru 3, we'll be hearing it. But and I'm going to be interested to see how they actually do the linkages and justify it and produce the evidence, all of that, because we need to be learning from this, y'all. This is a lesson in judicial repression and prosecution that we got to keep our eyes on. If you're just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers with Voices from the Battlefield, and I am here with Brother Bakari Olatunji. And Bakari, talk about, we know who the chairman is, and a lot of times they're going for the head of the organization. Can you say a little bit about Hess and the other co-defendant, Jesse Neville? I mean, I've met Penny at some of the things here. I don't know if I've ever met Jesse, but they have some key roles in the organization. So talk about what they do inside.
Yeah. Well, first we have to understand that the African People's Socialist Party that Chairman Amale Yeshitela co-founded in 1972 and put that on the ground. And for 4 years, they were continuing the Black Revolution of the 60s. And it was 1976 when the chairman built the African People's Solidarity Committee. It's an organization of white people where it's like putting an organization behind enemy lines to build in the white community the whole dealing with the question of reparations, dealing with the question of being able to be on the right side of the question where they have a stake in it for themselves. So the African People's Solidarity Committee comes out of that tradition. It came out of the work, again, that came out of SNCC mm-hmm. and building. So it's a new strategy. This is something that we didn't have in the 60s, but we have today, where we have in over 130 cities here in the U.S., we have solidarity forces on the ground in over 130 cities here in the U.S. So that's something we didn't have then. So Jesse is a member and a leader in the African People's Solidarity Committee, a young, brilliant, upcoming leader in his own right. And we have Penny Hess, who is the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, who has been so since 1976 when the chairman first called in for white people to come and work under leadership of the Black Revolution. And so Penny has been around, and Penny has lived up to everything that she gets, all the accolades that she gets, and she is the true leader of the African People Solidarity Committee. And all of this is under the leadership of the African People Socialist Party and Chairman Amale Yeshitela, who is the leader of that organization. And when we look at that, again, it parallels to what we talked about a little earlier about Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman, you know, and a whole summer project. So their attack on the African, and the thing is, the attack on the chairman is nothing new. The chairman has survived assassination attempts of bullets being fired in the rooms with doors were open, houses being firebombed. 1996, I do believe, in St. Petersburg, Florida, we had a community meeting with 300 strong. Police attacked a regular community meeting for free speech. And, you know, on and on and on. And then we talk about what happened here in, on July 29, 2022. So they have always attacked us. One of the things that's new with that is that the organization of the North American and white people, they have to come with them. They have to go with that, too. And that's something you just didn't see too often. So the reality is they are under our leadership. So when they attack the chairman and they're attacking the African community, and it's really an attack on free speech.
So I want to make sure that people understand when you described who Jesse and Penny are, the operative words, because then we'll understand why they were targeted. Penny Hess is an anti-racist white person committed to the liberation of African people. Jesse is young. See, when I heard that young, then it let me know why they were targeted. So these three people are not random selected targets. So I just want people to understand that. So when you go after the young people in the organization, you really are going after the roots. You're trying to cut the roots off. You got the head, so you're trying to cut that off. So it's a very calculated strategy here, y'all. So I just wanted to make sure that we paused and understood why they are going after these particular people and why they have become the Uhuru Three. So I think the whole notion of freedom of speech gets thrown around quite a bit, brother. And you know, what it means in this country is, and we've seen it, as you said, be applied to other folks, you could basically say whatever you want and be protected by First Amendment. So what is it that then you start to pick and choose, you start to dice and slice when you hear something that you don't like? And even in this country, at least up until today, you can make anti-government remarks and be protected by the First Amendment. Correct. So it doesn't mean that you get the rights only if you agree with the status quo. That's not how it works. So there's always been people who have had opposing views to the Constitution, to the rights of other people, all of this stuff. People have a right to say whatever they want. But now, here's a case where we're going to select what a particular organization has been saying and then criminalizing that. So I do want people to understand what's going on here. So when you all talk about the freedom of speech aspect, what is the response to the average person about like going on trial for this?
Well, first and foremost, I just want to respond to something you said a bit ago. The chairman, Jesse and Penny, do not represent an anti-racist politic. What we represent is an anti-colonial politic. Colonialism is the fundamental contradiction facing African people here and around the world. It is a place where we find ourselves powerless, where other people are making decisions about that. So what we struggle for is to have power in our own hands to feed, house, and clothe ourselves. Racism is just what's in the minds of white people. And, you know, frankly, I don't care what's in their minds. If I got the power to defend myself and whatever their thoughts are, I'll deal with that. So our request is for power.
Okay, and I appreciate that clarification.
That's the thing that we have to look at. But, you know, the thing is right now, that's the thing. This government is in a very fragile state. The chairman has summed it up and talked about an uneasy equilibrium right now. And you see the power shift where, like we talked about, the whole thing with the White House a couple of years ago. That is just representative of this weakness. Right now, the United States government cannot stand criticism. Nobody can talk to it about its role in Ukraine. Nobody can talk to the United States government about what it's doing around the world in terms of its role with the Palestinian struggle right now. So, of course, they're going to go attack those who are most critical and those who have the clearest analysis of what's going on. And that's why they are attacking the Uhuru movement. We've always, the line that we have, the understanding of us being a colonized people and building an anti-colonial movement, that's what the Uhuru movement started out as, and that's what we're maintaining today. It's nothing different on that. It's the same government that's been oppressing us since they forced us on them boats and brought us over here. So we're talking systematically, we're talking about the same system. So because of the fragility of their situation today, they are attacking us, and they're using free speech to basically shut down the whole apparatus for everybody. Because the thing is, they're using us as a cover. Mm-hmm. You know, because when have African people ever had free speech? And when have we ever had a right? We haven't. So they're coming at us that away. That's why we want to take this thing to the Freedom Summer Project 2024 in St. Petersburg. We mobilize in hundreds and thousands of people to come to St. Pete to march on that court and to get a verdict that is not guilty. And that's going to be the deciding factor, is having the people in the streets. I remember in Oakland, California, when I was a young man, and I remember Huey Newton was in jail for killing an Oakland police officer some 4 years earlier, right? I was there at the courthouse on August 15th, 1970, when Huey got free. And it was tens and thousands of people in the streets outside that courthouse talking about free Huey. Mm-hmm. And you know why Huey got free? Because of those people in the streets saying free Huey.
Right.
So the reality is we're going to have to mobilize the people to educate the people. That's why for this summer project, we're going to be having educations. We're going to have political educations. We're going to have Sunday rallies. We're going to have door-to-door outreach in the community. We're going to be, this is going to be a real Snickify type activity here. And we take that from the summer project of SNCC in 1964, and we're bringing it right back here in the South, right there in St. Petersburg, Florida, which, you know, the majority of the population is white people. And in 2017, we talked about this, Akile Kanin, who ran for mayor under the reparation slogan that they say the Russians told us to do, is running for mayor again, and we're going to be bringing her in. She's running for city council here in Florida again. So we are getting back on the platform, getting back into the electoral arena while we do this trial. So, yes, the United States government has barked up the wrong tree in messing with the Hoover movement, and we need the people to come to St. Petersburg, Florida, August 31st. You have to come. The trial begins in Tampa, Florida, which is right across the bay from St. Petersburg. And the trial will begin the day after Labor Day on September 3rd there in Tampa. So we really encourage people to come. And if you can't come, support it in whatever way you can. And people can go to handsoffuhuru.org for more information. And you can get a lot of information about the specifics charges that they have, the federal codes that they have. You need to get the information. Read about the motion to dismiss that we filed. And just last week, and this was over a year ago, and just last week, the judge filed that, you know, we can't. Threw it out. So the reality is all of this information, and we want people to be armed with all of this information, because this is the thing that is going to, we're going to win. And the government, they can't win either way.
Right.
They cannot win. So the thing is, we want to bring this to the people and let that be the verdict, because the people will decide on who's guilty and who's not guilty. And we're putting the state on trial in this case.
So I think people should know that there has been a broad political spectrum of support for this, particularly around the freedom of speech aspect, because if you are part of an organization, whether it be left, right, or whatever, you could easily be targeted for this. And so when I see the kind of support that the Uhuru 3 has, including a Tucker Carlson, then I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? But if you really believe in the Constitution, Bakari, you know that that's a fundamental piece that we all hang our hat on, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum. So in some ways, with him being a broadcaster and sometimes definitely spewing things that I don't agree with, you still have to support his right to say that. Just right. Like you have to support my right to disagree with it. So I think seeing that really does amplify the importance of it, no matter where you are, no matter what you believe, that's going to be protected speech. And so when I saw Tucker Carlson's name there, I said, okay, it's not that it legitimizes it, but it opens up the door for people to understand in a deeper way that this is not just about black folks having speech. You know, the same thing could be used against radicals, against extreme, whatever. And if we say it's for everybody, then it has to be for everybody. So that was just a little note that I wanted to throw in there. But tell us about what actually is going to happen on the third. Is this going to be a bench trial? Is it a jury trial? What, how long is it going to last? Will there be reports from the battlefield that's going to keep us abreast of what's happening every day? Yeah, tell us about that.
Thank you for asking that question. First of all, when we talk about the right to free speech, which is absolutely correct in what you just said, but it's also the right to be heard. So the information that we get out through free speech has to be heard and not censored the way it is. I mean, people are getting what they got. You go to jail getting on Facebook. They call it Facebook jail. They censor you if you ain't, you know, putting out what they want to hear. So the reality is that we are fighting for the right to free speech against the very government that has always censored us. But just getting back to the question that you raised, if you can repeat that one more time.
So just give us a description of what's going to happen at the trial. Is it a bench trial, a jury trial? How long is it going to last?
Well, it is going to be a jury trial. Right now, we're looking at it to last maybe a month or less, is what we're looking at. Again, I say things would have been over if they would have just, you know, the motion dismissed would have passed, but we're going to move forward with that. We feel we have a very airtight, you know, case. We know who we're up against. We know the power of the state. But, you know, again, they don't have, as far as I'm concerned, a leg to stand on with the things that they're bringing out. And we got a great group of lawyers, I mean, who are taking this case on. And I don't know them personally. I've met a few of them, but I'm telling you, we got our A team out there. And as you said, they tried to bleed us economically for that, but we went to the people and the people raised the resources for us to get this outstanding team of lawyers that we have. And we're going to continue to go to the people for other victories, but it's going to be a jury trial. It's going to start in Tampa, Florida on again, September 3rd, Tuesday, September 3rd. We're anticipating roughly a month or less, as I said, and that we will be having speakers outside of the courthouse. We're going to pack the courthouse every single day. We're going to be getting reports come out of the courthouse every single day. There will be expert testimony there. We want to have artists there, our sketch artists there. We want to have it to where they will know we're present and active. It's not just going to be a few people there. Like I said, we're going to have thousands and if not hundreds of people outside of that courtroom every single day that that trial
And it sounds like, brother, that you all also have set up the apparatus to control the narrative. So if you got your own sketch artists, you got, you know, reports coming out, that cannot be tampered with. That's coming directly from the mouths of people who know. So that really is going to be powerful.
We're talking about self-determination and we have to control the narrative. And that's the thing that the government does not want us to do. And that is one thing that we're going to definitely bring there to Tampa, Florida. And all of this is a part of the summer project, Freedom Summer, 2024 summer project.
Yeah.
And it is just, when you think about what happened 60 years ago, and you look at what's happening in 2024, there's very little difference. You know, they were attacking us then for the basic democratic rights of African people, and they're attacking us now for the basic democratic rights of African people, in this case, the right to free speech. So the reality is nothing has changed, and that is one reason why we have to really build an anti-colonial fight, you know, because we have to. If we're fighting against racism, how do we know we won? Does somebody put up a white flag to say, I give? Mm. You know, but when you have power and you wield power, when you have agency, you know that you have to win that amongst the people. And that's the thing, to give people confidence. We're doing work here right now in St. Louis, Missouri, where we have some great economic development institutions right now. We got a community center over there on West Florissant. We built the basketball court there where our youth can come out. We have an African Independence Workforce Program where people coming out of the colonial prisons can transition back into society in the African community where they came out of. We have a whole apparatus of different institutions, all economic institutions of the Uhuru Movement, that they can act and get trades and develop and get out and be very useful in the community again and help to build and transform that community. So we have to have the economic and political as one. And that's what we're doing right now in St. Louis. And the beauty of it is we came here again, like I said earlier, because of the situation at Mike Brown. And I did listen to your previous show with the chairman, and I really unite with I just moved here, and I love St. Louis. St. Louis is a different kind of city, and I mean
that it is. It is.
You know, and it like I say, there are songs and movies that really talk about St. Louis, and it's really the type of place that I'm glad I moved to, and I'm glad I'm here. But it's actually to carry out the continued struggle that African people have to be involved in, and just as we've seen over throughout the history of our people, it would be no public schools if it wasn't for African people fighting for the right to educate our children. And when we look at the Civil Rights Bill and the Voters' Rights Act in 1964 and 65, if it wasn't for African people out struggling in the streets, we wouldn't have that today either. So it's always been the motion of African people that have always been in the forefront to fight for almost every right we have as a people.
True.
I hear all the time, you got to go vote. You got to go vote. Our people died fighting. I don't know if we died for the right to vote, but I know we died for the right to have the ability to feed and house and clothe ourselves, so the right to not have us being shot down like Mike Brown was. So the reality is, yeah, we have to really support this whole Freedom Summer project that we got going on the ground. And I mean, there's so much that people can do. And like I said, they can go to handsoffuhuro.org to get real time updates in terms of housing, transportation, the different events we're going to be doing. Every day there'll be something on the ground that people can jump into and be a part of, whether it's a teach-in, whether it's a political education. We're going to continually have our Sunday rallies every week. So we will be building and going out doing door knocking and going out getting the information out to people, as you just said, because if we have to take it to the people so that we can bring them to the courthouse on September 3rd.
So I'm going to pin the part about the outreach and what Uhuru is going to be doing in the future. I want to go back for just a minute to the trial, because I'm thinking it's a jury trial, and I can't help but immediately think about an all-white jury. You're in Tampa. So what has the defense team thought about in terms of, I know if they didn't give them the right to dismiss, they certainly aren't going to probably admit to giving them a change of venue. But what are the expectations there of getting a fair and impartial jury?
Well, I can't address that. I'm not on the legal team. I do know that we have a great team, and I'm pretty sure they thought about all of that. But I can say that we're going into the trial, going into the courtroom with a lot of confidence based upon their laws, based upon their right to free speech, holding them to the letter of what they say. And that's what we're going in there with. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most important aspect of it. The United States government likes to uphold itself, especially with a Negro going into the White House again that they're pushing and then talk about how things are so hunky-dory nowadays. The reality is we know that this young woman that was just murdered up here in Springfield.
Yeah, Sister Massey.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sister Massey, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's been at least 150 black people murdered by the police since Mike Brown. So what has changed, you know? And that's why we have to, you know, go into this trial confidently and raise the anti-colonial question, raise the question of African people have to be free from this colonial bondage. And we have to have the right to say that mm-hmm. to the people. We have to have the right. We have to have free speech to go amongst the people to say, this is what it is that we have to do. So, yeah, the right to free speech is really at the center of what we see right now at this trial. And we really want to have people get behind it.
Well, you all will be doing all of this, Brother Bakari, in a state that pretty much has put laws into place to chill assembly and protest. So I'm just wondering, as you all are gearing up and you're going into the communities and there's going to be, particularly on the day of and every day of the trial, there's going to be active, you know, protest and informational things going on. How are you all addressing what's going to happen outside of that courtroom in terms of possible arrest, in terms of, you know, anything that might happen, because one of the last rulings of the Supreme Court said that if there is a organized protest and somebody gets hurt or property is damaged, the organizers of that particular protest are going to be held accountable. So I'm just looking ahead, brother, because I'm saying, you know, if they don't win one place, they could win another. So I know that one of the things you all have been pretty vigilant about is making sure that security is good, not just for the chairman, but for the members and for anybody that's coming into you all's space. So has there been any discussion amongst some of the rank and file cadre about how do we protect the spaces that we are bringing people into?
Our intent is to go in and is to exercise free speech. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to go there to exercise free speech and hold the United States government accountable. And our thing there, we don't go there to intend to break windows and, you know, things of the sort like that. Our intent is to go there to be heard, to be seen, and to, again, hold the United States accountable for the crimes and the laws it breaks against African people every day of the week. And so it's just an exercise of free speech. And again, our intentions is not to go there to break their laws.
And I hear that, but there are also agent provocateurs that are sent places so that there does appear that look at them, look, see what they did, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just saying I have to go past all of that to say people that are going to be coming there, and then you have somebody whose intention, whether paid or not, is to cause some more
right.
grief and some more reaction, some more defense to what's going on, and have people say, see, look at them. You know, they came down there, blah, 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 blah. Just a note to say that, you know, these folks have thought about all angles, and I always
right.
think we should too.
No, we bring an organization in there. We have an apparatus through our organization that we have plans to take on whatever might come. So that is definitely on the table, and we will deal with that accordingly.
Good to know. So I want to get back to what you all are doing in St. Louis. And I know you say you all decided that St. Louis needs to be a place where you come, you sink some roots, and you do some stuff, some transformative stuff. Are there any other places where that's happening outside of St. Petersburg?
Well, we have institutions throughout this country. Again, I just left Oakland, California, where we have an institution, the Uhuru House. Uhuru means freedom in Swahili. We had an Uhuru furniture store there and in Philadelphia up to last year. We have an Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida. And those are the places where we have physical buildings, but we have influence all over the world. We have in South Africa and West Africa. We have forces in Europe. Throughout Europe, we have people in the Caribbean. So, but just in terms of our economic institutions here in St. Louis, this is our what we call our Black Power Blueprint. And what we, if we do it here, we can build it anywhere around the world. And that's why we call it the Black Power Blueprint, because we want to achieve Black Power. We want to achieve agency in the community. Right now, we're in the process of building a kitchen here in St. Louis, a bakery cafe. And matter of fact, tomorrow morning we have a hearing with the zoning department with the city of St. Louis, so that we can, build that kitchen. And after the trial, we want to have a place to come back to celebrate, to eat good food, to move their process forward. So, yes, and St. Louis offers us all of the opportunities to build, such a project here that again, we can duplicate in Oakland, California, in Chicago, Illinois, in Tampa, Florida, in New York, or wherever the case might be. So we just really want to get the word out for people to know what's going on with the Black Power Blueprint here in St. Louis. It's such a wonderful thing. And anybody here in St. Louis right now who's hearing me, come to 4101 West Florissant to see the magnificent building, the garden we have, see the 50-foot flagpole flying the red, black, and green today. You don't have to believe me. You can come by and see it for yourself. They say Missouri is a show-me state, so I'm asking you to come by and see it for yourself.
So one of the things that I intend to do is I can't do it until the day or two after the trial, because this show is on Wednesday. So you all will be starting on that Tuesday after Labor Day. So I hope to be able to give our listeners a brief update on what happened in day one. Because to me, day one, with all the opening statements by both sides, is really setting the tone for the whole trial, which seems a bit long, though, Brother Bakari. I mean, a whole month?
That's
I mean, that means there's going to be lots of people to testify. I mean, that's a long time.
That's just our anticipation. Mm-hmm. We really don't know how long it'll be, but we're giving it a month. We're hoping it'll be a lot
shorter
than that, but yeah.
But here's the thing. I want people to understand this trial, and hopefully folks in Uhuru can find out the exact amount, but this is costing taxpayers money to pursue the Uhuru 3 over a 3-year process. I mean, this started. So I just want to let people, this is being done in our name, y'all. This is our money, our hard-earned tax dollars that's being used against an organization that could very well come out with nothing. So that means all this money has been spent to do what? What's the purpose? So I always want to bring that piece in, because we act like we have no power, no agency, but here's our money being used in this way. So, you know, I'm looking forward. Now you got me pumped up for September 3rd, day one. I'm going to be watching the news. I'm going to be, looking to see what happened, some of the speakers that will be at the rallying outside. And it sounds to me, not only is there excitement building, but this is a history lesson that I really want people to pay attention to. We are getting ready to go into a November election, where, you know, the folks on the Republican side are already saying that this is going to be a stolen election, you know, pumping and priming their folks to do, irrational things like they did on January 6th. So we really, Brother Bakari, have to think about what's going to be happening in the next couple of months. And how do we prepare ourselves mentally, spiritually, physically about whatever is going to happen? And I think if Uhuru 3 is successful in resisting and dealing with the charges against them, that's going to be an incendiary kind of act for these other people who then say, yes, they're letting these people come into our country, say these things, do these things, and get fuel for the fire that they're trying to continue. So I, you know, it's just a volatile time. I think, I'm trying to remember what the chairman says. What is this, a fragile what?
It's an uneasy equilibrium.
Uneasy equilibrium. That's, you know, I like that concept, because really it is. We really looking at a changing of power, the changing of forces, the shifting of political winds. And for us, as the determinants, people of African descent have to be informed, they have to be engaged, they have to understand not just the consequences, but the victories ahead. I want to thank Brother Bakari Olatunji for joining us today and to helping us understand what is happening. And we're gonna get some more updates, y'all. We're gonna get some more updates. So tell us in these last few minutes, how is the Uhuru 3 doing? How are they doing spiritually? And I know the chairman is going to do his thing in terms of, you know, keeping people upbeat. But, you know, this could get you down. This is the kind of stuff that you could get definitely demoralized. So how are they doing?
The morale is high throughout the organization. We are going there to win. We know the reality of who we're up against. We know the power of the United States government, but we have confidence in our understanding and our initiative and our goals and objectives. I just want to read a couple of things. We have a journal that the African People's Socialist Party puts out. It's called the Burning Spear Journal, the Burning Spear newspaper. Mm-hmm. It's been in print since 1968. It's probably the oldest black revolutionary newspaper in the U.S. that I know of.
I think it is.
And we have our 14-point platform. And I just want to read two of those 14-point platforms to end it on. Point number two, since you talked about the taxation question, we want an end to all local, state, federal, and taxation of black people by the U.S. government and any of its agencies. They use these very same taxes to keep us locked into colonial bondage. It's these very same taxes that they're using to send these billions of dollars to kill and murder colonized Palestinian people on their own land right now. We've always had a position on this, and if people can get a hold of the Bernie Spear, you can go online and get it and look at this 14-point platform. And point four takes us to the heart of what this discussion has been right here. We want the right to free speech and political association, a guarantee of the right to work for the betterment and emancipation of black people without fear of political imprisonment and the loss of life, limb, and livelihood is what you're talking about right now. And we take
this,
we take this in confidence, and we go into that courtroom. And the thing is, the only thing a slave has to lose is his chains. So, you know, we are about anti-colonial fight, and we want to end this really vicious, violent system that has been so violent toward African people for so many decades. It's almost become, you know, people accept that, and we cannot accept that. You know, we have to have dignity and bring that back to our people and really struggle for it in a real good way. And to me, this trial brings it all to the head.
It really
clears up the air for a lot of people. I was in Chicago a few days ago at a reparations event and talking to people, giving out information, and you'd be surprised at the numbers of people who know about this trial.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
And, you know, it's like it, that when I, just ordinary people, you go to drive any place where African people are in this country, if they don't know about it, they will know about it shortly. Mm-hmm. So I have the total confidence, and I know as a fact that Jesse, the chairman, and Penny all are going into this with confidence. There is no demoralization, and it is high morale as we move forward.
Okay. And to the point about, like, people knowing about it and many of them understanding what is happening, you hardly hear about any of this on mainstream news. And so I think it really is going to be important for us, using whatever networks we have, whatever communication devices we have, to keep people engaged and informed, so that they know what's happening. There may be a call put out by African Socialist Party to say, we need folks to do this because we see this is happening or this is about to happen. We need y'all to call, write somebody or whatever, the governor of Florida. So I just want us to be on alert for this very, very critical trial of repression that could easily be replicated to just ordinary people in communities across this country. So that's why we have to keep an eye on this, you all. So again, thank you for coming and sharing with us, Brother Bakari. Cause we ready now.
Yes,
you got us ready. You got us armed with the information. Now we just have to like make sure we let other folks know and to keep our eyes on September 3rd to see what's going to happen. And then on September 4th, we're going to be talking about it here. With an update, we have a guest, but we're going to use a few minutes to talk about here's what we know is happening and here's what y'all may need to do. It's kind of exciting times that we're
in.
Yeah. So next week, guys, we will be having, Linda Nance on, and Linda has done the research. Some of it I had done previously and have written about it in some of my columns about the racism at the World's Fair. That's the 1904, World's Fair that, you know, a lot of times it gets, you know, pumped up and you look at those pictures, you see there a black person there. But apparently there were some black folks there. And so Linda Nance is going to talk about that, but we still know. And what the parts that I write about is the Africans and the Philippines and the Filipinos and other folks who were in cages, who were brought here to be in that World's Fair, enslaved so that people could watch them as they did whatever. I mean, it's pretty sickening when you understand what was happening then. So she's going to be back here on the 4th talking about that. Not only on the 4th, on next week. But yeah, so we got that coming up, but we also have, I just want to do some on the third, which we're going to talk about, or the fourth, where we're going to talk about this update. We're going to have a sister who was part of that 1,000 unsolved homicides. She'll be here talking about that process and her loved one who still has, justice being elusive. And we're going to talk about, you know, why the St. Louis Police Department can't seem to resolve homicides when black folks are involved. So that's the crux of it. That's what I see, the crux of it. And so, we got some shows coming up, but we also have some events coming up, you all. And so we want to, know that on Friday, this will be the last commemorative protest for the Jefferson Bank Group. And so we'll be assembling at 4 o'clock in front of the old Jefferson Bank there on Market and Jefferson. 4 o'clock. We'll have some speakers there that will be talking about some of the workers' struggles and workers' victories that we've seen over the last year. I'll be reading a short message of solidarity from our first black congressman, Congressman Bill Clay. So we want people to come out. This is the last one, partly because it's no longer the Jefferson Bank. It's another bank. And so it just does not seem, logical for us to stay there, but that doesn't mean we're going to not, you know, convene or not talk about workers' struggles. We'll continue to do that in other ways. But yeah, so join us 4 o'clock on this Friday, August 23rd, for the last of the Jefferson Bank commemorative protest. On Sunday, the Organization for Black Struggle is doing a Pomoja session. And basically it is about organizing 101 in terms of lawmaking. Some of us want to make changes and fight for reforms, but we don't always know how the system operates. And you got to know the system before you can impact the system, before you can change the system. So none other than Terry Kennedy, who's a former alderperson for many years, we know him by Kujaliwa Hukumu, is going to be joining us to do that session. So he is an expert on how to do this. He helped us with local control of the police department and establishing the civilian oversight ordinances. So he knows this stuff. So that'll be Sunday at 4 o'clock as well at the Rowan Community Center. And we definitely hope that you can join us for that. There are some other things going on, but we need to figure out where and how we're going to be involved, you all, because there is just so much going on. You don't have to change the whole world, but pick one thing that you really are passionate about and just double down with other folks who are equally as passionate about it and see where that takes us. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. I will see you on the battlefield. Be safe.
Hand in hand now. Let's do it right now. We don't need to fuss and fight. We can do it right now.
Do the right thing.
We've got to do it.